From Sylvain Labs, welcome to Critical Nonsense. On our show, we dig deep into cultural ephemera and pose questions to each other to inspire interesting conversations. This is Critical Nonsense. This week, we talk about wild prognostications of what's to come in 2019.
As always, this is still what a Joey sounds like.
And this is what an Aaron sounds like.
And this is what a yogurt-eating executive producer, Jess Vander, sounds like.
Hi, this is Jess eating yogurt.
What type of yogurt is it? I'm just curious.
It's just regular. Faye.
Oh, the faye. It's Greek, though. That's a step up.
Do we have any prognostications about Greece in 2019?
Prognostication about yogurt is something other than Greek will arise.
Icelandic yogurt's coming for ya.
Icelandic yogurt has arrived, but how is it?
It's coming to steal the throne. In the Game of Thrones.
I was about to ask you
the
either.
Game of Yogurt Thrones.
You play or you die. No, you win.
You win.
All right. We've already fallen off the rails.
Oh, God.
Whoa. 2019.
Yeah.
So this is the year.
It's the year of a lot of different things. And that's exactly what we wanted to talk about with you. Or I wanted to talk about. That was a really weird royal we.
We've been talking in the first few weeks of the year, and we're going to make some prognostications. Some of them wild.
Wild!
Some of them crazy.
Crazy.
Some wet, wild, and crazy.
Wet, wild, and crazy. Kids. Blimp.
And some of them maybe you think are just a little too tame, and we need to turn it up a little.
Blam.
So we're going to go through these one by one. We each have a few. Mm-hmm. And if you think we're idiots or insane, let us know.
Yeah.
Who wants to start?
You know what? I think Joey should.
Yeah, I think Joey should.
Yeah.
All right. Brrr. Prognostication number one.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I think, since the Trump presidency started, there's been sort
it
of...
Did?
When did it start? The government shut down, so I don't know. There's been sort of conversations in the past where during divisive times where art starts to have like a major uptick related to politics and sort of having a message about politics. And obviously there was plenty of controversy in the Obama presidency, but it was a pretty quiet presidency. And so I've been waiting since the Trump presidency started to see when art was going to start kind of mm-hmm. taking on political messages and be inspired by events happening in America. And I think 2019 is the year that we start to see a large uptick in Trump-related art.
I love this. I love this one because I think it's been kind of like building for a while.
Yeah.
Because you've got, like, I would argue that Get Out and A Quiet Place.
Interesting.
Are Trump art.
Right? I will buy that.
Yeah. And I think like those sorts of things are like oblique. Cause like even Bodyguard on Netflix right now.
Yeah.
Which is a really, really good show. And the whole thing is kind of talking about or the tension in the show, part of it, because it's incredibly tense, is built into what happens when you're set to protect a leader who has completely different, not just different viewpoints from your own, but whose past political decisions directly negatively impacted your life.
Yeah.
And it's, again, great 8 episodes. The guy that plays Robb Stark in Game of Thrones is actually the... But I think that that's another thing that's playing against this sort of like rise in political divides across the globe.
I think you bring up a good point too, right? Bodyguard is sort of based in and on British politics, mm-hmm. but is kind of coming. I think there is, more broadly speaking, and not as an indictment, I'm not going to go into U.S. politics in any way, shape, or form, but I think the... It's not just anti-Trump. I think that's not an appropriate categorization of what I'm talking about. I think it's sort of like anti-extreme, like authoritarianism art or anti-fascist art or pro-democracy art.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ones, so there's a bunch of the Alien movies mm-hmm. coming out
yes.
this year. I think a lot of them are slated for the first half of this year. And in all of the movies, all of the trailers that I've seen so far, the kind of theme has been against like overreach of like authoritarian governments. There's a movie coming out called Captive State, and I think it has Gillian Anderson, although she might be in multiple of these alien movies, so like we'll have to figure that out. She's kind of got her corner off of the X-Files, and it's like, we're doing an alien movie. Do we have Gillian Anderson involved?
She's awesome, by
the way. Yeah, but Captive State is sort of like there's an authoritarian alien invasion, and they're just kind of, you know, oppressing America or the world, and there's sort of an uprising coming out with, like, young, which is great, like a young black lead actor.
Mm-hmm.
And so the rise of this art, like, up until now hasn't been there, and it's sort of going to be an interesting thing to see by the end of the year. Like, what we haven't seen, or I haven't seen as much of, is music coming out,
going towards
this message. I mean, arguably, Kendrick Lamar's album has some of that current running through it, but that wasn't sort of like the key message. It was more broadly around like racial inequities and things like that, but it's not irrelevant.
It's weird, not weird, but it's funny to try to pull those things apart because it's such a part of that presidency right now.
Yeah.
Museo del Barrio in New York has had so much great art that's had to do with, the immigrant experience and specifically what it means to be Hispanic American and or just straight up Hispanic in America. And that's literally been art that's been developed in that museum for a long time and shared in the museum for a long time. But it has been showing some exhibitions that are more focused on what's going on now.
Yeah. To that point. Why? I mean, art has always been representative of its time. So what makes this time more special than any other time? I feel like Met Passover Sunday.
Yeah, I think I should specify too of going into like moving into the mainstream a little bit.
Yeah.
Not like there has been art post the beginning of Trump presidency, like fine art. And kind of more underground stuff. But I think what I'm thinking about is sort of that crossover into the mainstream. I'm thinking about like, was it like Rage Against the Machine put out albums like at the beginning of the George W. Bush presidency and things like that, that like crossed over. There were movies at the time, things
Dear
like that.
Dear Mr. President by Pink.
Yeah.
Gulf War song, Moxie Fruvis.
Yeah, I think Vice, arguably, the Adam McKay film about Dick Cheney is sort of part of this movement. Even though it's about Dick Cheney, it is still sort of about like this underlying machination of things you don't realize are happening and about sort of government overreach and things like that. So I don't know, but I have a prediction based on some of the trailers that I'm seeing coming out this year that we're going to see sort of a crossover tipping point into mainstream art, if we can call cinema art.
Yeah. Yeah. So I too have a wild prognostication. Am I not allowed to do that anymore?
No, you should. You have to do it every time.
You know I will.
Yeah, I mean, the way that you introduced your voice has to be the way you speak for the rest of the episode, I think.
Just wait until I start doing accents next time.
Goodness gracious.
It's going to be really horrible. So I have one that is similarly inspired by the state of like kind of the geopolitical world today, because nothing's more exciting than geopolitics. I think that in 2019, we're going to see a huge uptick in made in America products. Specifically, like a really an increased sensitivity toward both made in America products, at least here in the US, but also potentially abroad, a lot more like sentiment of, you know, in China wanting made in China products. And I think there's certain categories that are more insulated from that effect. And I'm thinking specifically like luxury products. Like people are still going to want handbags from Italy. People are still going to want fragrances from France. Like that's just, you know, in general, those are categories that tend to play on their provenance really strongly.
Yeah, champagne comes from champagne.
From champagne.
Yeah.
Please pass the Bordeaux. Like I said, accents were going to start, and it doesn't even make sense. But I think that with the rise in populist nationalist sentiment.
Yeah, I was going to say nationalism. That's sort of like the flip side of what I was talking about in the last one. Like, art is starting to come out that's sort of pushing back against some of these ideas. But at the same time, there are inherently going to be people who are going to be embracing those ideas at the same time, right? Like, there's always that push-pull effect.
And there's a regulatory environment that's starting to, or regulatory debate that's starting to play out that I think might start seeping into the mainstream, which is this conversation about, trade wars like China. Like, products are just going to start getting more expensive from China, and we rely heavily on China when it comes to producing and providing our goods.
Yeah, I mean, there's some... I've read a few articles recently about the trade war, specifically as it relates to the looming prospect of recession, and the Chinese economy is slowing its growth. And so there's sort of like hope that the trade war will resolve itself because China and the US need each other. But the fact of the matter is, if you're building a hard good right now, or you're a smaller company that's trying to introduce something new to the world in the US, there is increasingly a benefit to considering building it here because of all the tariffs and things like that that you're facing, right? Like, if you're using steel at all in the production of that good, you might be wanting to be making it in the US instead of having it made abroad.
Yeah. And so if you've got all those sorts of things happening between the US and China, you also have, over the past, basically with the Silicon Valley boom and potentially the bust that is, you know, overdue, it feels like, there's an appreciation for a lot of the ideas that are coming out of the US too. And so many startups are starting to become more mainstream and break through. There starts to become a brand America halo for ingenuity that started back in the 70s and 80s with Apple.
That's a long decline. I gave a talk recently about sort of the role cities play in technology and sort of accelerating development. And what's interesting is that cities that you wouldn't historically think of as like innovative cities in America, right? They're sort of like those, like,
leave Columbus alone.
Yeah, like Columbus is exactly like Columbus is doing incredible things, but these cities in the US are starting to create these environments that are promoting innovation, right? Like Tulsa right now is doing like this big push in the past 2 months or something like that to start to try and be a magnet for innovative companies. Both big companies like come to Tulsa, set up an office here, will set up an environment for you, but also sort of accelerating growth within the city. And so those small hubs of innovation where cities are helping to fund or creating an environment for innovation also sort of sets up, you know, in what you would traditionally like pejoratively call flyover states that we potentially as coastal elites, I'm using air quotes that you can't see, what might ignore. Like, Columbus is doing interesting things.
And Ohio is a great state.
Yeah. Columbus is the...
Okay, leave it alone, Jess.
Yeah. Okay.
Columbus is the new model for a sort of like second tier city setting up like incredible things. They just... with a federal government grant in 2016, they turned $40 million into $500 million and are like, you know, incredible. And that sort of pushes towards Made in America too, where you have a company that doesn't have like people who have manufacturing relationships in China or India or wherever. They're like, I have a new product, we're building it here, and out of necessity.
Is there a world in which we start seeing tags on clothing that are like, made in Tulsa, or, you know, like made in much more micro or nicher locations?
That would be cool. To it. Yeah. I mean, I feel like we definitely saw it with Detroit with yeah, Shinola, exactly. Like, for example.
And Chrysler. And,
yeah, I guess Chrysler too, slightly larger. But I do think that there are a lot of different places that are going to start to, or that have the opportunity to earn that badge and like mm-hmm. build the equity, build the provenance of their own location. Mm-hmm. And that does start to become a thing. Because, I mean, going back to that thing about like the Silicon Valley bust, like, I'll throw that in there as another wild prognostication that might start to deflate pretty significantly in 2019. Mm-hmm. And other places are going to respond to their deflation while we are still facing technological competition from all sides mm-hmm. outside of the U.S. So that's another one for me.
All right. Jess, hit
okay,
us.
Okay, here's the situation, guys. Every fad diet has come our way, you would think, at least, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Most recently in this last year, what was it? There was paleo, there was keto.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Soup.
Broths. Oh, particularly made of bones.
Well, I will throw in, cleansing. I would throw cleansing in there as a diet, which is just drinking cayenne pepper.
That's we so talked about that gross. A little bit at one point.
Yes.
Yeah, right. But I kind of feel like there's one diet that we haven't officially seen yet. And
not in like a mass way.
Right. Or not even in a termed way. Like there's never been a name for it. And I don't think this is going to be the name, but I think 2019 is going to bring us a climate change diet.
Tim Allen?
Yeah, I need more. Tell me more. What do you mean by this?
Okay, so you know the report last year that was basically like, guys, we are totally screwed.
We have 10 years.
At best.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think...
10 years to make a change. Yeah.
Well, I was actually inspired because one of my uncle, not uncle, extended family, this is how...
Your play uncle.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what that means. Whatever.
Like a play cousin. It's like a cousin that's actually not your cousin. That's like a family friend that you up playing with.
Yeah, right.
Play cousin.
Yeah. Said that for his New Year's resolution, he resolved to eat cleaner, right? And I think that's sort of the phrase that we have now. But there aren't rules about it. And boy, do we love those.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to diets. And I think that it seems time for people to like sort out some very specific regimen that's like low emissions, low water use diet plan.
Yeah, I mean, there's big backlash for Fiji recently about like the Fiji girl that was in one of the, what's it called, Step and Repeat?
Yep.
Yeah, she was like taking over a step and, or like photobombing people in a Step and Repeat at like the Golden Globes.
The water company, right?
Yeah. Ah. And like post that, people started putting stuff online of like, Fiji is taking water from Fijians that they can't even get their own water from their own aquifer. It takes like 26 to one to make 26 parts of water waste for you to get one bottle of Fiji water. Like all of these things, like you're seeing some of that backlash of saying like these things aren't sustainably sourced. Your tap water, you know, Fiji attacked like Cleveland's tap water or something at some point, and they like did a test and they're like, our tap water is cleaner than your bottled water, so fuck you. But I think you're right. Like people are starting to get smarter, and you've seen like that educational increase of like sustainably sourced, humanely harvested, like all of those types of things. But it makes sense to me that this would start to transition, because historically you've had, you know, one of the arguments that I've seen for people who became vegetarian wasn't around like the humane treatment of animals. It was around like, it's just better for the environment to move to a plant-based diet, so I'm going to do that. And I think, you know, that is sort of like one like leading indicator type of thing where you're seeing people change their diets based on their values, and the climate change issue is like rapidly rising to the top of, you know, people's minds.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. Another part, I think, is also just by necessity, right? Like what with the natural disaster in California that is leaving tons of agricultural centers with not much left, right? So like, what do you do when all of your farmland is burnt to a crisp?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the dire reality of climate change, I stutter and I freak out a little bit whenever I think about it being a question mark, but that's also just because I believe in science.
Yeah. Like I believe in science.
I believe in science. And it is really sad and it's really scary to me to think about my niece and nephew and just that the basic premise of what sort of world are we leaving behind them when we're not doing enough to slow this down or stop it.
Yeah. That's why it's such satiric relief to imagine these dieters who are like, I know what I'm gonna do.
Yeah,
no but almonds, but not having any of them.
Exactly.
But it is an example of like one of those things where like I don't know what to do about climate change, so but I can change my diet, right? Like I can eat a shit ton of lentils,
and I can cut out beef. Like how I've heard this like crazy over the past year, and we in my house have definitely started pulling back because cows have such a negative impact on the environment. They're such a great
huge
impact.
Carbon footprint.
Right. Yeah. If you pull back on your beef.
So. Yeah. That's what she said.
Oh, no.
Okay, next.
I've been rewatching The Office. I'm sorry.
Put him back in The Office.
Yeah.
What you got?
So my next one is about Facebook. Take that, Zuckerberg. Zucks on the street.
Okay.
I think we're going to see what has been sort of a slow push in this general direction, but I think 2019 is going to see a major backlash against Facebook. keep the sound effects coming. I'm gonna try to use onomatopoeic language, yes, and you just hit me. At the end of 2017, I believe, in like the beginning of 2019 or 2018. Stratechery did like a big piece around Facebook's kind of hitting a turning point. Like their revenue had been continuing to grow year over year, but there was a quiet like data point in their year end reports and their 10K or whatever it is, or earnings calls, that they had kind of reached a point where they started to have decline in user numbers for the first time. And then this year we've seen sort of continually like, you know, Mark Zuckerberg looking like a robot in front of Congress and not knowing how to respond like a human being to points where people are saying, like, you're doing things that are not matching our values. You're allowing, you know, whether it's like Russian bots or misusing data, you have the EU pushing back on all of their data privacy laws, all of these things. People are becoming more aware of what their data means and how it's being used. And anecdotally, you're starting to see conversations happen, not just between, you know, us, like our friends with each other saying like, you know, I think I'm going to delete my Facebook account or whatever it is. You're starting to see like prominent voices have those conversations. I was listening to a Vox, Ezra Klein's podcast, and he had a Neil Dash on, and they were talking a lot about Facebook at one point. And you know, I was listening to Bill Simmons' podcast last week, and he was talking about deleting his Facebook account. Like that idea that we're sort of at this moment that if Facebook doesn't do something, at least in the US, it doesn't seem like the trend line is looking positive. And I expect that sort of delete your account type of thing to go beyond sort of the most informed people and start trickling down to other things.
I mean, actually, what were you going to say, Jess?
I just was looking up the numbers on this one, and even according to a Pew study as of last year, they were saying, even if not just deleting their accounts, a plurality of users have significantly decreased their activity on Facebook, so...
And that report is, I love that report because it also specifically, there's another section that starts to talk about, I think 17 and under or minors. And it talks about the top used social media sites, and Facebook declined for the first time.
Yeah.
Or was out of the number one spot Yeah. YouTube bumped them out, if I remember right.
Yeah, they're just getting, they're getting into this like weird, sketchy place to try and like claw back instead of like changing the platform or changing their behaviors or kind of making sort of systemic changes to the way that they're running their company in order to like align with values and just trying to like do growth hacking to get people to come back. And I haven't really used Facebook much at all. I mean, like, we're talking like on one hand the number of times I've used it since the presidential election in 2016. And my dad posted a picture of my baby after he came down to visit. And so I was like, oh, what is the picture? And I went to go look and I couldn't log on because I didn't feel like logging in and my account wasn't already logged in. And so I didn't. And then like an hour later, I got a text message from Facebook saying like, come back to Facebook and use your account. And I was like, you're text messaging me? I didn't even sign in. I just like clicked on the link that my dad sent me and you're already, that sort of like creepiness behavior mixed with the fact that they're just not operating in a way that feels in any way human. You're seeing more conversations about it. And I just feel like there's going to be a backlash. And you know, Facebook is a massive company. In that conversation with Ezra Klein and Neil Dash was talking about like, or maybe it was Ezra Klein was talking about like, they're at the level where they're basically like a religion in terms of like the number of people involved in one thing. Like they have over 2 billion people using Facebook and like only religions really get to that level of users. But it maybe they can turn a corner and solve something, but I just have a hard time seeing it right now.
And also no one's leaving Instagram. Like they own it too. Instagram's doing fine. Just they'll probably put some energy in Instagram if Facebook falls apart.
Yeah, but Instagram's not the same thing.
No.
Yeah.
But they're still making the money.
Yeah, yeah.
making the money.
The only thing that I think we can say with certainty, at least just my opinion,
just
but
certainty.
That Portal is not the answer.
Yes, I wanted to. wanted to bring up Portal because that's like a such a good indicator. Like they built a product that seemingly has a use case that would be interesting to people. Like my parents were like, "Oh, I saw." Like they didn't actually even know that it was Facebook or that it was called Portal or anything. But they were like, "I had a Home Hub from Google at my apartment," and they were like, "Oh, is that thing with the camera where you can have a conversation?" I was like, "No. That's Facebook." Like clearly there's a use case that even my parents would be interested in to like see me more easily or have a device dedicated to that thing. But the fact that it's Facebook, the immediate backlash was like, why would I put a camera in my home and send that data to Facebook?
Yeah.
Like there's just no way that I'm going to do it.
Never going to get it. I got one.
Yeah.
I got one. And it's actually kind of directly related in the other direction. I think that in 2019, we're going to see companies with a worldview or who have a specific worldview throw that in the background. I think we're going to... run with me on this like a gazelle through the plains.
Falcor.
Yes, or Swiftwind, if we're going to go She-Ra, because it's better. You know, I think that we, especially this week, so much conversation about the Gillette TV spot and the conversation that it waded into about toxic masculinity, which I'm not going to get into because that could be its own hour. But I think that big companies have listened to a lot of marketers over the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And reminding them that consumers want to purchase with companies that align with their values and that's super important. Mm-hmm. And so you see Pepsi really fucking up with Kylie Jenner. If you go back, you even see Target really putting their money where their mouth is and taking gender off of the toy aisles and ensuring that there's going to be coverage of same-sex couples within the company. And each of these different events has had both positive and negative impacts for any one of these companies over the short and long term.
Mm-hmm.
I love that I give those examples and I don't talk about Nike with Colin Kaepernick, but
yeah. Where they had like an amazing earnings call after the Colin Kaepernick conversation and advertisement campaign that they did, right? Like their earnings were through the roof and everyone was saying like, we're boycotting Nike or whatever. At least sort of like more right-leaning people were saying that. But at the end of the day, like they made their money.
Yeah. So my prognostication is that we're coming up around election season. We're about to get into 2020. And it's already the weirdest political season in history.
Mm-hmm.
Just on the face of technology alone, in the way that this is playing out, I think I feel very comfortable saying that it's the weirdest in history. And I think that companies on the other side of this, the business community, is not going to, they're going to be conservative. They're not going to want to start throwing out these really potentially polarizing viewpoints when right now, in 2019 right now, we're going to be more ginned up, anxious, anxiety ridden, and demonizing of that sort of activity than we already are, which
yeah.
is really intense.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree with you that it's going away.
How dare you not agree with me?
But I think you're right. Like this is like a moment in time that will sort of be telling, mm-hmm. right? Where if people truly want this, like this is a moment where they want it more than ever, right? Like if people want companies to have a worldview, this is sort of like a very clear test case for with the election coming up. And, you know, it's 2 years away and we're saying it's coming up, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, time is a small circle. What is it? But the... It's totally irrelevant that point.
Really
but that it is like this test case that we're coming into of saying we're as polarized as we've ever been, maybe more polarized than we've ever been. And we're hearing people say that they want you to have a position on things. Not necessarily that you have to take a position on the election, but you have to sort of take a position on the way that you operate within the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. Like this is a time, you know, Gillette is, we'll see in the next, you know, month or so when sales numbers start coming in, whether this has actually negatively impacted them or if it's just created a conversation online, but
background, Gillette's Best of Man Can Be campaign.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
True.
We can put the link to the commercial that they made in, on the website, but you know, come 2020 or 2021 post this election and people are saying like have a perspective on the world and the companies that choose to wade into these muddy waters, like are they better in 2021 than they are right now is going to be like a telling moment.
Yeah. Jess and I had some conversations yesterday with a couple geopolitics experts.
You know, typical right. Wednesday.
Exactly. One was an expert in U.S.-China relations and the other one was more generally focused on globalization. But both of those conversations.
A globalist cuck.
Oh, God.
We're talking about politics.
We're talking about politics. So I guess. And that is the sort. That's exactly the type of thing that he was getting into, which is that there's a transition that has already happened about globalism going from an economic behavior, a business community behavior, to a full-blown ideology.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that ideology is the thing that is fueling a lot of fires of discontent. But when you have big companies that are making really big statements about the products that they make and about the way that they want to show up in the world, the stakes are much higher than they've been in the past.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a lot easier for most marketers to just really start talking about, I'm going to pick on Gillette, to just go back to start talking about how many blades they have in their razor rather than actually having a point of view on what their role is in masculinity and gender.
Yeah.
And I think that we find our jobs to be the best, most fulfilling, and most interesting when we push companies to realize that people do care about those things. I still do believe that in general, companies want to be conservative. They want to pull back. They want to be risk averse.
Well, the question is too of like in those values expectations, is it about the way that you make the product? You know, we were talking about Cora before, right? Like saying that you make, you know, sustainably like making your products with sustainable materials, sustainably created, and have like a perspective, right? Like they make organic feminine hygiene products, and then they also give feminine hygiene products to women in the third world, young girls, so that they can go to school and don't have to stay home when they're having their period, right? Like that is like logically coherent. Like this is your product and you're taking a stand around something that fits specifically to your product. The question is whether Gillette could, you know, in their advertising portray something that fits with this idea of like a more modern perspective on masculinity, or, you know, make their products in a way that demonstrates that they're seeing the way the world's changing, or whether they have to sort of explicitly make a stand around something that is sort of tangentially related. I don't know the answer, right? Like in some ways it's sort of nice to see a company say like, this is a thing that we don't agree with, and so we're taking a stand on that. I don't know whether that's good business. I can't say for sure it is or it isn't, but having that like coherence of this is a product we're making and we do it the right way, that still makes sense to me. Whether or not you should start to like enter territory that is increasingly outside of what that product is, I don't know.
Yeah. I think that we will still see companies recognizing that they have to do right in the long term.
Yeah.
I think we will see fewer companies willing to take a stand in 2019.
Yeah. Jess, rapid fire. Hit us with your last one.
Okay, here's the last one. Secret surprise. 2018 was the year of
horrible everything.
The dog.
Correct, but also some might say the year of the unicorn.
Yeah, ooh. Yeah.
What is the year of 2019?
When you say year of the unicorn, are you thinking about like tech companies and stuff like that?
No,
or
no,
just like
no.
Unicorn in
sparkle magical yes. horn?
Yeah. No, you're so right. This was the year of the unicorn. Unstable Unicorns, solid board game.
Oh, okay.
Just throwing that in there.
Here are a couple of options that I'm going to throw out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, what mystical creature is the mystical creature of 2019?
So actually, I don't even think it's going to be mystical. I think we're done
otters.
With mystical. That's my, okay. So otters, cute, holding hands, floating.
Yep. Oh, mm-hmm. So cute.
Also, llamas and sloths and other things that don't otherwise get a lot of attention. Or mm-hmm. maybe that's overplayed already. I mean, I'm looking for for ideas.
I love this. Sloths did have a soft moment with Zootopia.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
That was a nice...
Yes.
Everyone.
That was my sloth laugh.
I wonder if we'll start to see it with like inanimate objects, like chairs.
Oh, the Japanese already have that with their mascot game.
Oh, that's true. No, that's true. I hadn't thought about that. That's true. Oh, actually, I do think as you take me to Japan, I immediately go to Katamari Damacy, which is this amazing video game that came out years ago. It was restored on PS4. And it has a very whimsical aesthetic and a very kind of bizarre, fun, uniquely Japanese joy to it.
Mm-hmm.
And
I love Katamari.
Katamari is a great series. It really, really is. And I think that we'll start to see bizarre, like happy bizarre. I feel like we spent a lot of time with absurdist mascots, or not, I guess, absurdist things for a while. And the unicorn was a breath of fresh air because it's so light and silly and bright, and I don't think that's gonna stop, but I do think it's going to be like a team of things.
Yeah, there's someone who I'm acquainted, like light friends with, like where like friends. We're friendly, we know each other, whatever. I follow him on Twitter. His name is Gautam Ramdurai, and he like is obsessed with Japanese mascot culture. And he shared one recently that was, I believe if I'm remembering this correctly, it was a mascot around like rectal health. Mm. And it was a like cartoonized rectum.
Damn near killed
to
him.
Get like your, like to get like checked and scanned for polyps, I guess, in mm-hmm. Japan. Like they have a mascot. Like every company has a mascot. Every like public office has a mascot, and this campaign around like getting your sort of like your colon checked had a cartoon colon like with like a face and like arms and whatever, but like maybe we need to look to Japan to see what the mystical creature of 2019 is going to be.
Yeah, there's an amazing article that Vice just put out about this. So we'll have to share that too.
Yes.
But okay, so Joey, otters, Aaron.
Chairs?
Chairs?
Okay, no.
Facebook is a chair. Does anyone remember that ad that they put out?
So 2018.
No, that was like 2014. Facebook put out Facebook is a chair.
Wow.
Yeah. You need to go back and watch that video. It's awful.
This is a really, really, really hard one, Jess. I like, because in my mind goes to just dumb shit that I'm crazy about, like centaurs and stuff like that. And I don't think that that's actually going to be the thing. But I think it is going to be, I think it will be something furry. It's not going to be something slimy or reptilian. So that takes out most snakes and large snakes a la anacondas. And I don't think it's going to be something that's intimidating like a centaur.
What about a chicken?
No. Hard pass.
Okay. Really? If come December we find ourselves, chickens abound,
shit,
I will think. Wait, that is the best thing ever.
I think I think chickens could actually be it. I think that there's, because I think that in urban
with me on the chicken front.
Yeah, this is something that's been happening in big cities for a while, the like rise of the urban chicken coop. And arguably, like, the kids who have already started growing up with these chickens in their backyard as pets, I think there's something.
Chicken
there's
diapers?
There. Yeah, we've talked about the luxury chicken diapers before. Right? Yes. So think about that. That's totally accurate, Aaron.
I'm going to do everything I can to stop this from happening. I'm going to invest all of my energy in 2019 to make sure that is not the year of the chicken diaper.
Oh, I like this, guys. And I like even more that we'll be able to come back to this at the end of 2019 and double check that our chicken diapers are still on.
Most of our prognostications right now are trackable.
Like, yeah.
You can say Facebook's declining. There were this many songs or these pieces of art around anti-fascism or pro-democracy are like did this much at the box office or X, Y, and Z. I don't know how we're going to track the year of the chicken.
Oh, it'll find its way.
Google Trends data on chicken searches is
chicken
through
emoji
the roof.
Uses.
Yeah, shows about chickens. Shows. It's all the kids shows with chickens as stars.
If I bet against any of these, I would bet against the year of the chicken.
Are we comfortable with all chicken, like roosters too?
Okay, bye, chickens. Guys.
Bye.
Critical Nonsense is a Sylvain Labs production.
Recorded in beautiful MacGyver Studios in equally beautiful New York, New York.
We'd like to thank executive producer and budding chicken farmer, Jess Vander.
We'd also like to thank sound engineer and Jumbotron installer, Alex Contell.
We'd like to thank designer Nora Mestrich for our cover art and for her interest in alpacas.
Also, production helpers, I should say, Sarah Gilbert, Les Jacobs, and Tony Vong, who also resemble chickens, roosters, and occasionally llamas as well.
And as always, thanks, Alain.
Thank you.
We'd like to give our special thanks
to Gillian Anderson.
Number one.
Gillian Anderson. One. You angel.
Angry angel. I like that. I also want to thank unicorns, obviously.
I want to thank Mark Zuckerberg's face at Congress because it gave me immense delight.
I want to thank the chair that he was sitting in because this is fucking the year of the chair.
You just need to start getting a pack of googly eyes that you carry in your pocket and you just start putting eyes on all the chairs that you interact with.
You think I don't already?
And as always, you know, just a real big thanks to wild prognostications that are going to be really wrong.
Yeah. Cheers to wrong.
Cheers to punditry. What the world needs in 2019 is more punditry.
I thought it needed more Wayne Newton. But that's okay.
Yeah. And Wayne Newton.
You know, I actually have to go back for a second. I know what 2019 is the year of Animal Wise, and I would like to thank him for it.
Yes.
It is the year of Gritty. mascot of Philadelphia.
Yes.
Oh, he's so gritty. Creepy. What are those eyes?
Exactly. The googly eyes. That's
Thank
what made me
you,
think of it.
Gritty.
He makes me nauseous.
The internet populace.
Makes you nauseous? You just don't understand.